And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. And today we're going to be examining what I think is an absolute emergency. This is crisis. This is a red alert. America's disastrous economic collapse. And when it began in 2007, and even now today, is it the Illuminati elite who are pulling the plug? Now, this is an exclusive report. For 60 minutes today, we're going to look at exactly what is happening with America. And I want you to understand that the world's chief troublemakers, including the Rothschild bankers, the financial leaders of governments around the globe, including our own government, have met this last month, late January, and on into early February in some cases, in Davos, Switzerland. That beautiful, scenic, mountainous, wintry, ski land paradise called Switzerland, the little town of Davos. It was the annual World Economic Forum. They were all there, the Rothschild bankers, the American leaders of finance, Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan, Chase Manhattan Bank, the head of Citicorp, Bank America, Exxon Mobil, all the oil company executives, they were there. They got their marching orders, friends. The world's press was invited to come and see the few sessions that were open to the public. And they dutifully reported it on the evening news and the cable news outlets around the world. We saw it in London Times newspaper, The Guardian, The New York Times reporting that the world's elite had met at the World Economic Forum. But guess what, friends? On January the 29th, there was a secret meeting in Davos of the bankers, and the press was not invited to that one. Meanwhile, things were going on. Hillary Rodham Clinton was in London, England, evidently having meetings for the Obama administration to further map out the war against Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen. Yes, they've added another country now to the global sweepstakes of World War III, Yemen. We are told that the Christmas Day bomber, or would-be bomber, who burned himself in his pants is about all he accomplished. But in any case, we're told he came from Yemen and he was a member of the Al-Qaeda. Of course, that's all malarkey, but Al-Qaeda. That's the Israeli Mossad and the U.S. CIA and Great Britain's intelligence services all working together. That's what the Al-Qaeda is. Now, today we're going to talk about Maurice Strong, former UN United Nations environmental leader, living in China today, has a mansion in Red China. One of the world's top capitalists now lives in Red China. And he owns the water rights to much of the United States of America. That's right. He's a Canadian industrialist living in Red China, and he may own the right to turn off the spigot to your water. Think about that. You think oil costs a lot. You think gasoline costs a lot. You think a gallon of milk costs a lot. What happens when you have to pay $20 for a glass of water? And the elite are putting it in their wallets or in their numbered bank accounts. Friends, the World Economic Forum met and some amazing things occurred because we're on the verge. And I've been telling you about this. You recall I said that this last summer I went to Pastor Butch Paul's conference. It was held in West Virginia, and I told the people there, they were all worried. The audience was worried and came up to me, what's going to happen to us economically, financially? With this terrific tax and debt problem, Tex, what is going to happen? I said, well, don't worry for a few months. Just don't sweat it 5-6 months. We're going to have a recovery. They said, oh, no, we're being told here at this conference things are going downhill right away, that we need to buy gold. Should we buy gold? I said, well, if you want to buy gold, you can. But I don't think that's going to save you. In fact, I think the price of gold is going down. And that's when I think a lot of them just left. They said, well, that can't be true. Everybody is telling us the price of gold is going to go to the moon. Now, friends, let me tell you. I said very clearly there, and by the way, you can actually get the DVD of that program next week. I don't have it with me here, but I'll give you information on how to get what I said there when I gave my talk. I explained exactly what the Obama administration was going to do, how we were going to have a false recovery, and then the crash would come, the super crash. Now, I've said that all along. I said this after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. Everybody said, oh, this is the big crash. I said, no, things are going to get better. And the Dow Jones average is going to go to an all historic high. And then we're going to see a huge crash. And we did. The Dow went to 14,000. And then it smashed all the way down to 6,500. It was less than half of what it had been at the peak. And if you don't understand, you say, well, you mean you said that the market would go up and then crash? That's right. I said it's going to hit an all-time high. Everybody was saying, no, we're going straight down. I said, no, it's going to hit a high. Well, the Dow's going up. The economy's going to get better. Now, there are going to be some pockets of bad times for the housing market and so forth. But in some areas, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, along the Gulf Coast, to rebuild, it's going to go up. But only for a short while, and then it'll be worse than ever. That's what I said. And that's exactly what happened. Now, over the last year, we've been told the green shoots are coming up. Things are getting better. Industrial production is a little bit better. The housing bust has sort of leveled off, and things are going to get better. Don't worry, we've all been told. I remember that back in the 1929, after the Black Friday of October 29th on Wall Street, everybody said, that's it. Everything's going straight down. But there were just a few wise people who said, wait, the market's going to recover. Things are going to seem to get even better. And you know what? 1929, everybody was frightened to death. Men jumped out of buildings. They sat on Wall Street. Bankers were desperate. Everybody, 25% unemployment rate. And suddenly things began to catch on again. The Dow Jones Industrial Average on Wall Street started going up. Everything, they said, you know what? The Great Depression is going to end. It's back to champagne and bubbles all over. But about 3 years later, then came the biggest crash of all. And that plunged us into the Great Depression. It wasn't 1929. It was the crash of 32 and 33. And Franklin D. Roosevelt did not get us out of that Great Depression. He tried everything. He tried all of his socialist communist methods. He tried the Works Projects Administration, the WPA. Oh, talk about stimulus packages. They came one after another. He tried by taking food supplies and burning them at bonfires. Said the less food we have, the higher the price will be, and that'll help the farmers. They took millions of gallons of milk and poured it out on the streets. The farmers did. They actually took everything from peanuts to corn and burned it in bonfire while people were starving. You say, no, Tex, that never happened. It happened. That's when price supports for crops began. And farmers were told what kind of crops they could grow and how much on their land. And some land was favored, and some farmers were told you can grow peanuts or corn or whatever. Others were told, no, your land, you can't grow. And their land was worthless. They were told what they could grow, how much to grow, and how much to charge for it all. Even the dairy farmers, how much milk they could produce. But none of these socialist communist plans of Franklin D. Roosevelt worked. And things kept getting worse and worse. Until finally, the big boys decided the only way out is a world war. And 50 million perished. Now, friends, we're here at the precipice of something very, very bad. And I believe a beast system came out of Davos, Switzerland, 2009 and 10. Basically 2010. Although they had prepared for this back in late 2009, but it was in January. In fact, the secret meeting of the bankers, Barclays of England and Shanghai Bank and the Hong Kong Bank and Bradesco, the Rio de Janeiro Brazilian Bank and our own bank, Citibank, Wells Fargo, all of them were there, along with all the other huge corporations, food, pharmaceuticals, oil. And they decided what was going to happen. Maurice Strong was there. Rothschilds were there. The Rockefellers were there. Now, I want to uncover some of this horror, because I want you to understand this, that things began to happen almost immediately. Suddenly, we're told that something called sovereign debt, that means debts of nations, has come to the fore. See, it's bad enough that the banks had all this debt because of all these derivatives and all these fake instruments. They drove up mortgages and selling them back and forth to each other. It was a creation of money out of thin air, and many of the American banks and world banks had 70 times leverage. Now, here's sort of the way it worked. You want to buy a house for $200,000. So you get a mortgage at Wells Fargo or Bank of America or one of the other institutions, Countrywide Mortgage, Wachovia Bank, Washington Mutual. Of course, some of these no longer exist. But you go and get a mortgage there for $200,000. You owe $200,000 in your mortgage, and that bank, let's just say Wells Fargo in this case, has a contract which says you will pay them back the $200,000 over 30 years at, let's say, 6 or 7% interest. It's legitimate. You get the house, but they own it. The bank owns it till you pay it off, and you owe the bank $200,000. They have a contract. They own debt. They own debt. Okay? Now, where's the money? But there is no money. They own a piece of paper saying they own debt. And you're the person that owes them. They're the lender, you're the debtor. There's no money. They want more money. You see, they want to have, I mean, they really want to jack up their assets. So they go to another bank and say, you know what we'll do? They go to, who knows, Wachovia or Barclays in England or some Swedish bank or a Mexican bank. And they say, we've got this debt, $200,000. We'd like to sell it to you. And that bank buys it. But Wells Fargo keeps it on their books. Ah. In fact, they go out and sell it 7 or 8 times. Now they have maybe a couple of $1 million worth of debt. Now, the banks that they sold it to, they don't really have the right to your property, but they own this debt. And they go out and go to 10 or 15 other banks and sell it again. Everybody is making money off your $200,000 purchase of a home, for which you have not paid, by the way, the debt. And it keeps being leveraged, and they call this derivatives. It's derived from the original debt of $200,000. Now, if you're foreclosed on, supposedly Wells Fargo will get your house back. But they've already sold that debt to another bank, that sold it to another bank, that sold it to another bank, that sold it to 10 more banks, that sold it to 100 banks, that sold it. And the average, they say, of leverage in the United States was 70 times. So your $200,000 was sold 70 times. 70 times 200,000, what's that? Oh, 1 billion for, I mean, you've given the American economy, I guess, you know, I don't even have my calculator here, but it seems like about $1.4 billion worth of debt. You're one little home. Well, what do people do with all this debt? Well, they've borrowed all this money, they go out and spend it. There's $1 billion being spent out there just because you bought a home for 200 grand. Now, they don't have any money. They got all this debt. It's just heaped on top of debt. Now, none of this was possible until the Clinton administration, when Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and all the other big bankers, Bank of America and all of them, said, you know what? If we could change the banking laws and throw out a Depression-era law called Glass-Steagall Act, we could play some fancy little games with some mortgage leveraging. And Bill Clinton said, sounds like a good idea to me. The banker said, sounds like a great idea. And Barney Fagg of the House Committee that oversaw this, and Rahm Emanuel, he was somewhere involved in all of this. And of course, there was Chris Dodd, the crooked senator from New England. He was on the Senate side. They were all for it. And they said, you know, and all these banks can go out there and get trillions of dollars of money out of thin air just by creating debt, just by saying, okay, we'll buy that debt. Debt that they didn't own. In fact, when everything came crashing down in 2007, 2008, nobody even knew who owned the paper. A lot of people had their houses foreclosed on. And, you know, one congresswoman told her people in her district, don't let them boondoggle you. Tell them you want to see the document that shows you own a debt to them. You know what? They had sold the same mortgage over and over so many times, the banks didn't know who had the document. They didn't know who had the contract. So when they went to court to try to throw the people out of their home, the homeowner simply said, well, show me where I owe you any money. And they said, well, we actually sold it to so-and-so, that sold it to so-and-so, that sold it to so-and-so, that sold it to so-and-so. And it's like, you know, hundreds of times out there in la-la land, in cyber land somewhere. And we've already changed personnel so many times here, firing people, hiring people, firing people. We don't know what happened, who filed the original document. It no longer exists. And you know what? Many courts said, well, then it no longer exists. There is no debt. Homeowner, go back. You got your home free. Quite a few actually now own their home that never paid their mortgage. They were foreclosed on. Then they went to court. The court says, well, if you can't prove they have a debt because you lost the contract, well, then there's no debt. It got to be a big mess. And let me tell you something, my friends. This was gigantic. And it was all planned to drive up everything. Can you imagine? It's like a man who makes, let's say, $50,000 a year going out and spending $500 million. How can that happen? Everybody would say, well, who gave you those loans? You make $50,000 a year. How'd you go out and buy a Maserati? How did you buy three executive jets? How can you live in a $25 million mansion and you only make $50,000 a year? Something is disconnected. Well, of course it was disconnected. They changed the laws so they could just go out and create money out of thin air. Well, that's what the bankers do. But this way, they really reveled in it. I mean, it was an incredible thing. And you know, it's so easy with computers to add zeros. 200,000, 200 million. 200 million becomes 200 billion. Just add a few, three zeros here, three zeros there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Then 200 trillion, then mega trillion, then gazillion. And I don't know what it goes to next. If you stack $100 bills up, the national debt of the United States could go all the way up to the moon, to Mars, and maybe into the next galaxy. You could climb a mountain of debt. They can't pay it back. Trillions and trillions. And everybody wants their money. Now, at first, when Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and all of them realized they had maybe overdone it, they said, we want all our money. And you know what? There was a company called AIG that insured it all. Insured their debt. Insured their fake instruments. Their leveraged mortgages. Their derivatives. And AIG paid out all its money and then said, we're going to have to go bankrupt. We've already paid out all our money to the bankers. And then the government says, well, here's $200 billion more of the people's money. Give this to Goldman Sachs. Pay them 100 cents on the dollar for all of their derivatives that went south. And they did. And they kept paying and paying, and the federal government kept giving them more. And don't believe 700 billion dollars was in the TARP plan. Because Simon Borofsky, the Congressional Inspector General, says, and this was 6 months ago, that up to that time, $26.4 trillion had been given out to bankers. And they still have their toxic assets. They still haven't paid for all of those millions of foreclosed homes and commercial properties that are sitting out there. Folks, we're just as bad off as we were in 2007 and 2008. But now we have something called sovereign debt. What is sovereign debt? It means the whole nation owes. It has now progressed in the last couple of years under George W. Bush and now Barack Obama and our Secretary of Treasury, Timothy Geithner, and our wonderful Messiah man, God banker, Chief of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke. It has now progressed beyond banks failing to entire nations failing, not to mention cities and states. I understand that Los Angeles is having emergency meetings, their city council. They're fixing to go bankrupt. The state of California, of course. The state of Ohio. The state of Michigan. The state of New Jersey. The state of Pennsylvania says their only way out may be to file for bankruptcy. Meanwhile, the entire nation of Greece, that's a member of the European community, says we can't pay our debt. Now, the European community has gone to its rescue only to find out that the nations of Portugal and Italy and Spain also say, guess what? We're unable to pay our debt. What are you going to do for us? That means that the European community, which came together, you see, they were all individual nations, but now they're all connected together and called the European community. They're like one people. Now they're pulling their hair out saying, what are we going to do? First it was Greece. Now it's Portugal. Then it's Spain and Italy and other nations. Ireland says they're having problems too. Meanwhile, Barclays Bank in Great Britain, one of the biggest in the world, says we got new problems. We may go under. And the whole nation of Great Britain may file for bankruptcy. Then over in Japan, The newly elected Prime Minister of Japan says, guess what? We may have to go bankrupt as a nation. And the yen, the Japanese currency is falling. Meanwhile, there's a company called Moody Investor Services. It's a rotten, corrupt company, but they're in the business of rating debt instruments. Now, without getting into all the technical things, and I've studied this for many years, Moody's rates you on how good of a credit risk you are. They rate corporations and banks and bonds, and they rate city bonds and state bonds and national debts. Now, Moody's says that they may have to downgrade America's debt. We owe too much. Now, the Congress has to keep raising the level of national debt. And Obama has just put, what is it, $3.9 trillion more he wants to spend? And he's got on the back burner that we're going to pay for the medical care free, give free medical care to 35 million illegal aliens, for one thing. So we've got this huge debt with Moody's Investor Services saying they may have to downgrade America's rating, which would mean interest rates would go up on everyone. Want that mortgage? Want to buy a car? Want to get a loan to do a little improvement on your home? Watch out. You could be paying way higher interest payments if Moody's downgrades America. Now, America's never been downgraded. We're like the blue chip. We're the class A. Can you imagine getting a bad credit rating? They used to laugh at nations like Argentina, Zimbabwe. Look at those poor nations. They're in bankruptcy. Their currency is useless. Their economy is down in the dumps. Too bad. We're in strong America. No problem here. It's not so anymore. Bernanke, Ben Bernanke, the Zionist Jew freak, who conspired with Timothy Geithner, and Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, and Goldman Sachs and Bush, Secretary of Treasury, Henry Paulson, to put us in this fix. Of course, there's Clinton was involved. The whole range of these, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. The Clintons, the Bushes, the Obamas. And McCain voted for all this too. So if he was in office, him and Sarah Palin, they'd be sitting there wringing their hands saying, well, they're the same kind of people. It's all the same. I remember old feisty Alabama Governor George Wallace ran for president on the American Independent Party ticket, party he created. He was asked, why aren't you Republican or Democrat? He said, well, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. Of course there's not. Well, Ben Bernanke, after all of these things, after this guy was sitting there overseeing the fall of the republic and the economic crash of America, the whole world, he comes up for renomination as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. You'd think they'd put the guy in a straitjacket and lead him away to a loony bin, wouldn't you? Or at least kick him out on the street. You'd think they'd fire the guy. No, they promoted him. They voted him in another term. They're going to keep him as a Fed Reserve chairman, what, for another 4 years? How did that happen? Well, remember now, Ben Bernanke was appointed by George W. Bush, the Republicans. And Obama kept him on. And now Obama says we need to keep a firm hand at the till. Obama's very happy to have Bush's man. Don't you get the picture? This is not Bush's man. This is Rothschild's servant. And it doesn't matter if a president is Republican or Democrat. They've got Bernanke. Well, to make the little people, you know, that's Tex Mars and the listeners to this radio program happy, you have to bash him up a little bit first. You see, the people, we all know that Bernanke should not have been nominated again and chosen again. This guy is one of the reasons why we're in such a fix today. And Obama says, well, let's give him 4 more years. And all the Democrats say, amen, brother. But surely the Republicans stood up and said, no, we will not have this man to rule over us and our finances. Did they? Well, you know, at his nomination hearings, the Senate committee, boy, the Republicans raked him over the coals. You've been a bad, bad boy. Slap on the wrist, Bernanke. You've been such a bad boy. You covered up crimes and did all kind of things. You're a horrible person. And Bernanke just sat there. And after a few days of that grilling, they all voted on him. And guess what? Those same Republicans voted for him. The head of the Republican senators, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell of Kansas, did he vote for Bernanke, Obama's choice to run the Federal Reserve? Well, as Sarah Palin would say, you betcha. You get my point? The Republicans helped the Democrats to keep the Zionist pig in office. Obama's man. Don't tell me we have two political parties. We only have one, and it's called the Money Party. The Money Party. That's what runs America. If you don't know that, you don't know anything. Turn off the radio. Listen to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. If you don't understand that they are stooges for one party and one party only. The Money Party. Republican. Democrat. Baloney. The Money Party. That's what runs America. That's what Bernanke is a member of. And Obama and Bush and McCain and Palin and Glenn Beck and the whole kit and caboodle. We're going to be right back after this brief message. Talk more about America's economic disaster and what's going to happen. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again here. You know, Andrew Jackson was a great American president. Old Hickory, they called him. In his inaugural address, he said his chief goal as president was going to be to abolish the Bankers National Bank. That would be the equivalent of our Fed Reserve today. Can you imagine? He gets up and he says, these people are nothing but a bunch of serpents. They're a bunch of vipers. And with God's help, I intend to rout them out. Wow. You don't hear that kind of talk today. There's no president we've had in our lifetime that said, I'm going to rout those vipers out. I'm going to rout them out. And I'm going to abolish the Fed Reserve. I'm going to close it down. We did have one president, John F. Kennedy. He said, I'm going to splinter the Central Intelligence Agency into 1,000 pieces after I get reelected. They made sure he didn't get reelected. He was shot November 1963, Dallas, Texas. Friends, he was killed because of a conspiracy. There are conspiracies in this world. Why else? How else could Ben Bernanke be chosen again for another term as chairman of the Fed Reserve, overseer of the entire American economic system, after presiding over a disaster? A disaster. They call this the Great Recession, the greatest economic debacle since the 1930s and the Great Depression. But now it's looking like it could become worse than the 1930s Great Depression. And this is one of the chief architects. And the Republicans and the Democrats said, let's give him another 4 years. You don't call that a conspiracy? Wouldn't you think there would be one leader in Congress who would stand up and say, this man needs to hit the road? Well, yeah, Sarah Palin said that, didn't she? Didn't she go on Facebook or Twitter now or something online? She's the one that said we need to get rid of Ben Bernanke. She's the one that said this is the banker's conspiracy. Didn't she? Oh, she didn't. Oh, I'm mistaken. Oh, I see. McCain voted for the bankers and all that TARP billions of dollars to be given to them. Remember that? Right during the campaign, Senator John McCain and Senator Barack Obama rushed back to Washington, D.C. to vote. And what did they vote? To give all those billions to the bankers. Both of them did. And you still don't believe in a conspiracy? Well, I've authored a book entitled Conspiracy World. You need to read it. If you don't believe there's a conspiracy in the world, my goodness gracious. Conspiracy World is the name of it. 432 pages, and it's used page, size of a telephone book, big telephone book of a big city. Many dozens, scores of pictures. And it covers the waterfront of conspiracy. You'll discover the truth about the Soviet communist conspiracy, about Barack Obama, Black Pharaoh. Oh, yes. You'll discover the bankers, the Masonic Lodge plan for America, and much more in this book, Conspiracy World. There's never been a book like it. I give credit to God. I am a weak instrument of God. I'm not saying everything is inerrant in this book. Not everything is perfect in my books. The only book I know that's perfect is the Holy Bible. But I know God inspired me in a great way in this book. The inspiration is God's. Any errors you find in it are Tex Mars's. Let me put it that way. But I don't think you'll find many errors. And I think you'll be inspired because you'll know the truth. Now, say in the preface to this book, the foreword, you might say, the introduction, actually, it's called officially, that I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in theories. I'm a factual man. I look for facts. I look for documentation. I want you to prove it to me. I'm like my good friends from up in Missouri. Show me. Then I'll believe, possibly. But I'm gonna research it. I'm gonna make sure of it. That's what I did in this book. And that's what I've done in the world of conspiracy or conspiracy world. It is a world of conspiracies that we live in today. You can't escape it. Conspiracy world, because the devil started it off by conspiring against God eons ago in heaven. He convinced one third of the angels to rebel with him. And today men are still rebelling against God and attempting to set up a new world order. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, the Bible says. So they're involved in witchcraft. And that's what I'm really doing, exposing the world's leading witches and warlocks in my book, Conspiracy World. I hope you'll order a copy. It's a big book. Can't put it in your back pocket. You know, maybe too big for a lot of briefcases. One man told me that he put it on his coffee table at home. And everybody that came there said, wow, they just thumbed through it and scanned through it and said, I got to have a copy of this book. I can understand that. One person said, I've been reading it for 2 weeks and I had to start over again. There's so much here. You know, you read 5 or 6 pages and you say, wow, let me go back and read it again. You're assuming there's so many nuggets in it. Conspiracy World. It's a compendium, like an encyclopedia of conspiracy science. And that's the key, friends. You know, that's what I am. That's what you are. We're conspiracy scientists. It is a science. Getting the facts. Understanding. Using reason and discernment. So from now on, when people say, are you a conspiracy theorist? Tell them, no, I'm a conspiracy scientist. I study things. I research. And then I produce facts. Factual information. Is global warming true? No. Is it a theory? Yes, and a bogus one at that. The science is there is no global warming. There's actually global cooling. You see, the facts always demonstrate something different than deceived men would like you to believe. There's a reason why they want you to believe such nonsense, such trash. You have to decipher and discover what are they trying to do. And that's what this book will explain to you. Now, how do you get your copy of Conspiracy World by Tex Mars? Go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. That's powerofprophecy.com. Also, you can send us a check or money order. Now, the book is $29.95 in bookstores, but we'll send you a copy for yourself at $25, just $25. Now, add $5 shipping and handling. So you might say you pay retail but get free shipping, or you pay $25 and pay for the shipping, and you get it cheaper than you would at a bookstore. You can also order it, by the way, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. But if you order it direct from the ministry, you help us. And with the money that we get, we put it right back in the ministry. I want you to know that I'm not getting any royalties on this book. No royalties for Tex Mars. Every cent goes back into the ministry. And we'll keep this truth going around the world. We'll keep our science going. We're a science lab here. A conspiracy science laboratory. And we work for you and God. I have the best bosses in the world. The people, you, my friend, who listen to Power of Prophecy. You who get my newsletter, Power of Prophecy. You who access our website, powerofprophecy.com. I work for you. I don't work for government. I don't work for the feds. I don't work for any university, any corporation. I don't have any secret society. I'm not a member of anything but God's true church. And what is God's true church? Well, that's the body of Jesus Christ. Is it a denomination? No. Is it a sect? No. It's Jesus Christ. That's what I believe in. A lot of people ask me, are you Baptist? Are you Pentecostal? I'm just a Jesus man. That's what I am. Well, you can't be that, they say. You got to belong to a certain church. I do belong to a church, the body of Jesus Christ. I believe the best thing in the world is for Christians to meet together, to assemble together, to love the Lord, to pray together. Do you need a big building for that? No. Do you need a cathedral of bricks and stone and mortar? Uh-uh. Jesus said, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I will be in the midst thereof. Think about that. Have you ever been with a friend and started talking about the things of God? I think Jesus was with you. He was present. And if you listen to him, he'll guide you. His Holy Spirit will lead you in the ways of righteousness. Now that's heresy to the big pastors. They want you to join their church. They want you to give their tithes and offerings. Well, we need offerings here too. We need help. But I'm going to leave that to the Holy Spirit to guide you. But I want you to know something, my friends. There is no one doing what Tex Mars and Power Prophecy are doing. No one. No one works for you as hard as Tex Mars does. I don't know of anybody that works for God as hard as Tex Mars. There's not enough hours in the day. I have to sleep sometime. But all the time I'm not sleeping, let me tell you something, my friends. 90% of the time I'm working for Jesus. The rest I'm eating, resting, I don't know, recuperating. Boy, the pressure's around here. But I'm not complaining. You know why? It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to get up in the morning. When I get up in the morning, I say, thank God it's a beautiful day. Maybe raining outside, ugly, snowy, blizzard. It doesn't matter. It's a great day. It's another great day to strive and work and press toward the calling of Jesus Christ. Every day is a great day. We're accomplishing something today. Miracles are going to happen today. You believe it, my friends, and it'll happen. And you know what? If you don't believe it, well, it may not happen for you. You got to have faith. The greatest thing in the world is faith. I believe God's going to do something great today. And he does every day. And the devil hadn't been able to stop us. Now, I preached you a little sermon today. I like that. A little positive thinking. The devil says he's going to do a lot. Well, he's a liar. Positive thinking, nah. No. But you just trust in God. You trust in Jesus. And you say, Lord, help me to be a conspiracy scientist. Now, you can get our book by ordering it toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Hey, call us and say, I'm a conspiracy scientist. I want some more scientific facts. I want to get Tex Mars' book, Conspiracy World. And if you get it and you don't like it, send it back to us. I don't think you're going to. We don't get many returns here. All right, let's return to our regular program. Our address, oh, yeah, thank you, Jerry. Jerry's over at the controls. He said, I need to give you my address. Well, yes. If you don't listen every week, you need our address. We're at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. We've been here for many, many years now. I've been sitting in this seat with this microphone, and Jerry's been over there for a number of years. Power of Prophecy. We're at 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, the Republic of Texas. If the United States don't watch out, we're going to have to become a republic. We're going to have to secede. We're fed up. We're angry. We're not going to take it anymore. And I bet you feel the same way in your state, too. If you don't come down here to Texas, we'll all team up together. We'll conspire together to keep the law. And the law says that Texas can secede if it wants to. I'm not ready for that yet, but I am ready to throw the rascals out of office by legal means. I am. And I want them out of there quick, too. Okay, let's return to our program. Again, you're listening to Tex Mars, Power Prophecy. We're looking at America's disastrous economic collapse. Did the Illuminati pull the plug? Friends, you know, Bernie Madoff isn't the only Ponzi scheme crook. Ben Bernanke's one of them. Timothy Geithner, Barack Obama. In Japan, the economy hasn't been doing very well for a whole decade now. You know, the Japanese economists call it the lost decade. The lost decade. Well, I think America has entered the lost decade. And the middle class, the working people, have lost their wealth. Most people have everything tied up in their home. Their home. And now they're what is called underwater. They're underwater. They owe more on their home than it's worth on the market. What did the bankers do in their secret meeting? Why should we allow a secret meeting of the bankers? Well, January the 29th, even Fox Business Channel and CNBC Business Channel reported the bankers had a secret meeting. Not only that, the day before at the White House, Barack Obama met with Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase Bank and the chairman of ExxonMobil and about 20 other bankers and corporation executives at the White House. And it too was closed to the public. Where's the transparency? I want to know what Obama discussed on January the 28th with those bankers. and corporation chiefs. I want to know what happened at Davos, Switzerland. Now, I'll tell you something happened that was pretty bad. The security chief there was murdered. This was in the news. Murdered. They said he committed suicide. Now, think about it. This guy was the chief of security at Davos, Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. He was the guy that made sure that everybody was safe, that there were guards everywhere, that everything was protected, that these secret meetings were allowed to go on, and he was found dead. They said he had committed suicide. Why would a man at the height of his career, chief of security for the World Economic Forum, what a great job of responsibility, why would he choose that place, that locale, that occasion, that day, right during the conference to kill himself? I think he was murdered. What did he know? Had he listened in on some meetings? Had he got so sickened and disgusted and frightened at what he heard in those secret meetings that he decided to leak to the press? Did he leak to somebody? Could he have leaked to Tex Mars? You know, some years ago, a man named George Hunt and I communicated. George Hunt's been sort of incommunicado for a number of years. Recently, though, he suddenly showed up, and he was on the conspiracy theory TV program with a former Minnesota governor, Jesse Ventura, George Hunt. And then my good friend Alex Jones invited George Hunt to be on his popular radio program, George Hunt. When George Hunt and I were communicating, and it's been about two decades now, George had just attended something called the Global Conservation Society, a meeting. He had volunteered to be one of them, and he was invited there at their meeting in Colorado. The Rothschilds were there, Edmund de Rothschild, David Rockefeller, the banker, was there, and many more. And George confided to me, and he confided to some others at the time, I wasn't the only one, what went on there. He said they want to use the environmental movement as a cover for a new world order. They want to set up something called a Global Conservation Bank. They want to have something through the United Nations called the Biodiversity Treaty. And then they wanted United Nations biosphere, so the United Nations would own all the world's virgin lands and forests and oceans. Of course, the United Nations really wouldn't own it. It'd be the elite. When the elite put controls and restrictions on wildlife areas, it means that you and I, the little people, can't go in there and see it anymore. It's closed to us. But they just build a helicopter pad, and they can go anytime they want to. There's places in this world, friends, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and all these other high-flying resorts, Vail, Colorado, and over in Switzerland, that you don't have access to, neither do I. But the jet setters bring their executive jets and their helicopters and fly in. And they meet in swank, sumptuous, luxurious surroundings. And they decide your future and mine. That's where they decided this cap and trade thing. It's called cap and trade. What it really means is we will put a global tax on everything that moves. Every piece of machinery. Lawnmowers. Weed eaters. Automobiles. Motor scooters, every piece of machinery, from robots to giant machines that manufacture shoes and hats and blue jeans, and they use electricity. The huge turbines, the giant things that give us our electrical power. Diesel engines, gasoline engines. Internal combustion engines of all kind would all be taxed. The use of them would be taxed. The sale and distribution of them would be taxed. Cap and trade tax. It would be the greatest tax in the history of the world. And Obama wants our Congress to approve it. That's what they discuss at Copenhagen. It'll stop carbon dioxide emissions and save planet Earth. Don't you get it? The world's going to end in just a few more months, says Al Gore. It's going to be all over through global warming. The Himalayas are melting. Don't you know that the polar bears, they don't have any more ice floes and they're all drowning. Oh, that's not happening. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I've been drinking in too much propaganda from the ozone man, Al Gore, and Barack Obama and all of his environmental czars. Maurice Strong was one of them. In my books, Dark Majesty and Circle of Intrigue, I reported some amazing things. Dark Majesty, Circle of Intrigue. Friends, I'm not just trying to sell books. Believe me, as I told you, I don't get royalties on these books. Every book you buy, whatever money we get goes into the ministry. But I know you've got to have these books, Dark Majesty and Circle of Intrigue by Tex Morris. Now, I discuss Maurice Strong. I was the first to expose Maurice Strong. Jesse Ventura found out where he's staying behind huge wrought iron gate and bars in China. He's got a big mansion in China now, Red China. The commies are working with the capitalists. How can that be? Well, they're all the same. Just like the Republicans and Democrats. It's a Hegelian dialectic. The two are one. What a scam on us. Maurice Strong. I quoted Maurice Strong. He actually one time gave a interview in which for a while, I think he was punished by the elite for speaking out too much. He said, you know, what we need is creative destruction. What we of the elite need is creative destruction. He said, what if all the rich men, the very, very rich, the super rich, the bankers and capitalists and so forth, what if we all met at a place like, say, Davos, Switzerland? Now think about this, friends. Over a decade ago, Maurice Strong said this, and I told you this on my radio program, and I reported it, and I wrote about it in my book, and I quoted it. He said, what if we're all there, including me, the super rich, and we all decide en masse, all as one, we say, let's pull the plug. Let's pull the plug on the world economy all at once and destroy the world's economies. Every nation on earth, bing, 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 like dominoes, like the lights going out in a huge brownout. What if we pull the plug? What if we destroy the world by will, by our willpower, by our decision to simply do it? And what if we just say we'll rebuild it the way we want? You know, the Zionist Jews and their Kabbalah, they have a plan for the conquest of the world by their serpent Messiah. And their plan says first the world will be destroyed. And then we, the Zionist God-men, will come to the rescue and we will heal the world. They even have a code name, Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam. T-I-K-K-U-N. First word. Second word, Olam. O-L-A-M. Don't go to your average neighborhood rabbi and say, explain Tikkun Olam to me. Their face will turn white and they'll exit very quickly. Tikkun Olam, the healing of the world, the mending of the world, the revising of the world, a new age, a new world order after the creative destruction of the present day world. And Maurice Strong says, what if we all go to Davos, Switzerland and pull the plug? We of the super rich. And we're going to do it for your own good. You bunch of puny ingrates. You bunch of puny little useless eaters. Worthless peons. How dare you challenge us? You think you're angry and fed up at your Washington, D.C. government, at your government in Berlin and London and Tokyo? We'll show you who's boss. You think it's you who built this world? Well, we'll destroy your world and we will rebuild it according to our grand architect's plan. Did you get that, dear friend? They have a grand architect that has a plan for a new world. And only through creative destruction can they create their new world. I wonder how symbolic the destruction in Haiti was. Destroy, then rebuild. Do you remember the captain or the army captain or major who supposedly was credited the saying, and I don't even believe it happened, but the CNN reporter made it up at the time, and people were shocked. After American military forces, including our air power, had destroyed a Vietnamese village, the CNN reported that the American officer there in charge, the Army officer, said we had to destroy the village in order to save it. We had to destroy the village in order to save it. That's what they've got to do. They've got to destroy our world in order to save it for their glorious empire that they have planned. And they have a plan. It's the plan of the grand architect. In my book, Conspiracy World, I show you it's a plan for a new world religion, a new world economy, a new world government. It's the religion, the great religion of light. And the father of light, the solar logos, Lucifer, Satan, is the father of this plan. He is the grand architect of Freemasonry. That's the Masonic plan for America. Read about it on pages 155 to 165 of my book, Conspiracy World. And Republican Minority Senator Mitch McConnell voted for Bernanke because he's part of the plan. And Senate Majority Leader of the other party, the Democrats, Harry Reid, voted for Bernanke because he's part of the plan. And Gettner and Alan Greenspan. By the way, Alan Greenspan used that term, creative destruction, at least a dozen times while he was chairman of the Fed Reserve. That's what we're going to have. That's what we're going through, creative destruction. You see, dress up something. Don't call it disastrous destruction. Call it creative. It's creative. If I go to your house and I bash into it with a tank and totally raise it and destroy it, and there's nothing left but pieces of timber and trash, and I say to you, don't worry, I'm healing your property. This is creative destruction. What would you say to me? More than that, what would you do to me? That's the Obama plan. That's the Rothschild plan for America. My friends, the wheel of fortune has already stopped spinning, and we are the target. We have been chosen for creative destruction. Watch what happens from here on out. The thing to do is to wake up. Don't accept it. Don't listen to them when they say, we've got the solutions. We've got the Messiah. We've got the man. We've got the plan. Tell them, get out of town. We don't want your Illuminati plans. We don't want Democrats. We don't want Republicans. We've got a constitution that's over 200 years old and a Bill of Rights. We'll take it as far as you get out of our sight. That's what you got to do. Sarah Palin, forget it. Glenn Beck, forget it. Rush Limbaugh, no. Harry Reid, absolutely not. John McCain, all of them. Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel, get out of town. Sawadi, farewell. It's going to be a new age, all right. Jesus is going to do some of his own renovation, and it may be soon. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power Prophecy. Been great to be with you. I may have been a little bit angry today, but I hope you'll forgive me. I think you'll understand. My prayer is that you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.